Okay, we were up to the two dots on the bottom, one of the numerous two dots here on the bottom, Lamed Vav on the base. Commenting on the Mishnah, gives a list, gives three lists, but really amounts to a single long list of miscellaneous and assorted things that are forbidden on Yom Tov and on Shabbos. And on the list, we got up to four lines up, three lines up, two dots. It says, Ve'elohein Mishum Rishus. The Mishnah breaks the list of miscellaneous things into three different groups. The first group called Mishum Shavos. Shavos just meaning prohibitions, Derabanan, kind of a generic one. The second category called Mishum Rishus, which sounds like in our usage we would say Rishus just means things that you're optional, that don't have mitzvah content, but the Gemara is going to explain, and it's very obvious just from reading those things in the Mishnah, that actually all of those things do have mitzvah content. And the third category, called Mishum Mitzvah, seems to be more intensely mitzvah. We'll talk a little bit more as we get into it in the Gemara. So on the list of things that are forbidden to be done on Yom Tov and on Shabbos, that are categorized as Mishum Rishus, it says, I think the Mishnah here lists four things. Lo Danim, Velo Mekadshim, Velo Chotzim, Velo Miyabin. Four things. The first thing here is Lo Danim. Lo Danim means that you don't have Dinei Torah, you don't have a case, a hearing, a trial, you don't have a trial on Beis Din. Beis Din don't meet on Yom Tov and on Shabbos. Gemara asks, we're three lines up from at the two dots. The ha-mitzvah ko'avid. But wait a minute, but isn't that a mitzvah? So what exactly is the question over here? Isn't that a mitzvah? So Rashi learns that, and we're going to see this question repeated in all four of these examples that are listed in the Mishnah as Mishum Rishus. Rashi explains in all cases, the question is simply a matter of why are we labeling these things as Rishus in the mitzvah, and in the Mishnah, since they're all very obviously mitzvos. And the question really is only, why label them? Tosfos has two dais about whether that's so. And one very significant day in the Tosfos is that, no, that's not what it means. It means that the presumption is that the prohibition only applies if it's a rishus. But if it's a mitzvah, it would be mutter to do these things on Shabbos v'yantif. And then the point being that the Gemara is asking, but wait a minute, but when you go to a din, that should be mutter because it's a mitzvah. And the Gemara answers, well, lo tzricha de'ika de'adif minei. Lo tzricha de'ika de'adif minei. That's not clear to me what the answer is. The words are, so the reference here in the Mishnah is even covering a case where there is somebody better. There's a better something, better person, better situation, better dayan. Presumably what it means is that you're having a din Torah, but not in the optimal location, and not in the preferential location, that the din Torah is happening where in front of a dayan where he's not the best one. In that case, the Gemara is calling this a rishus. It's not really a mitzvah. It's unclear exactly what the rule here is. I don't know, Rabbi Weissman, you have an insight here as to what could be intended here? Okay, it's not so clear. I didn't see anything at all in any of these Mefarshim here about what that refers to. But in any case, it's, according to Rashi, just a matter of words that sometimes, look, normally it's a mitzvah levoladin. Normally it's a mitzvah to have your grievance settled in a beis din. And over here it's saying that, I guess, sometimes the mitzvah is not fully fulfilled if you go to a beis din that's not properly, competent to hear the case, not the optimal beis din. But in any case, that's what the Gemara clarifies is why you can include lo danin in the Mishnah under the category of mishum rishus. The Gemara in the bottom line, where it says velo mekadshin, and you're also not allowed to get married, you don't have kiddushin. The Gemara asks, v'ha mitzvah ko'avid. v'hamitzvah kavid. You're not allowed to do kiddushin v'hamitzvah kavid. The Gemara asks, again, same kind of a question. Why is that listed here in the rishus category? After all, isn't it a mitzvah?
When we're talking about the hamitzvah kavod, it's saying the dayan is doing a mitzvah, or the baal din is doing a mitzvah, the person who's
It's a mitzvah levo ladin. So the baal din are doing a mitzvah in this, and presumably the dayanim are participating in mitzvah. It's all a big ma'aseh mitzvah to try a dini mamonis. Mamonis anyway is a mitzvah. Presumably, other criminal cases would also be a different kind of a mitzvah. Okay, but in any case, if you're not allowed to get married, kiddushins, remember in the times of the Gemara, kiddushin and nisuin are two different processes, two different activities, and two different events. And it's only mentioning here kiddushin is forbidden on Yom Tov because the Gemara elsewhere refers to nisuin as being aser, even men haTorah. So it's not only a gzeira de rabbanim. That would be really an issue. But kiddushin would not. Kiddushin is only an issue de rabbanim. And the Gemara asks again, why is it listed as a rishos v'ha mitzvah ko'avid? My answer is, well, it's not always a mitzvah. Lo tzrifa de'isla isha ubanim. It's not always a mitzvah to get married. What if you already have a family, already have children? So then you want to have another wife, or you want to either already marry a second wife, or you already have a family with children, and now you want to marry later, I don't know. So Rashi anyway just says that it still doesn't make it not a mitzvah at all. There is a kind of a small kiyum, Rashi says. Rashi says there's a small mitzvah to have more children if you're still able to have children. But in any case, it's included in the Mishnah as being rishus because in some cases it's not really a full mitzvah. And then the last two cases was called lo cholzin v'lo miyadmin. You can't do chalitzas or yibum. Gemara asks, "V'ha mitzvah ko'avid?" Gemara answers, "Lo tzricha de'ika gadol, v'ha mitzvah v'gadol liyabim." Gemara says, "Well, sometimes the yibum that you Gemara says that the yibum is the mitzvah. It doesn't ask about the chalitza really, but the yibum is a mitzvah. It shouldn't be considered a rishus." And the Gemara answers, "Well, because the proper way to do yibum, the Gemara says, is with the eldest brother." That's mitzvah begadol liyabim. But if you're going to have one of the other brothers do the yibum, then you see over here in this Gemara, that's considered a kind of a flaw in the mitzvah, and therefore that's enough to label that act of yibum as a dvar harishus. I don't know. I mean, to me, it's obviously a mitzvah in any case. The only question is whether it's still going to have... whether it's a weaker mitzvah. It's a little bit weaker because there would have been a better way to do it and you're choosing a poorer way to do the mitzvah.
Doesn't the Yibam also have Kedushin, or is it even like, is the Kedushin?
Well, theoretically it's worse. The Yibam is the Nisuin, actually. So it would, in any case, already be Asur Mitam
right,
that.
You say, right,
yeah, you should have had that objection. That Yibam should already be Asur anyway without this Gezeira of Yibam. So I don't know what to tell you. I didn't see the discussion about why is Yibum here presented as Issa d'Rabbanan. It should already be forbidden based on the Issa of Nisuin. So I don't know what to tell you. Okay, then the Gemara... Well, just one thing I wanted to point out is the Gemara asks... No, let's finish first. The Gemara asks here, and what's the reason for all of these prohibitions? All four of these, the Gemara says... In all cases, the prohibition is only the Rabbanan, Shema Yiftov. In all these cases, the Din and the Kiddushin and the Yibman Chalitza are all forbidden the Rabbanan, Gzeira Shema Yiftov. One thing that's actually missing, and the Rishonim actually raise as an enormous issue, which is, doesn't talk about a get, doesn't talk about a gerushin. It's not listed in the Mishnah, doesn't say over here, presumably it should be already forbidden and included in the same category. And the Rishonim, most of the Rishonim are saying, well, that's obviously included and forbidden, therefore also to do Mesiras HaGet on Shabbos. I'm not talking about writing the get, I'm talking about delivering the get on Shabbos V'Yantif. And some Rishonim are not necessarily convinced that should be forbidden. We certainly would not allow it normally, question is only in Ashasa Dechak, which actually leads to the question of what about Kiddushin B'Shasa Dechak? Once in a while, the Rishonim had some well-known cases of difficult situations, difficult shidduch, and you had like a now or never opportunity to get married, and it's like late on Friday afternoon, it's falling on Friday night, that kind of a thing. So they have discussions about how we would put together all of the shittos on this daf to say whether or not you're allowed to do a kiddushin b'shas ha'dechak or a get b'shas ha'dechak on a Shabbos.
When the get is like the one of the things that you have to write a get. All the other stuff you can do without a writing.
That's what they say. Kal v'chomer. This thing it requires ksiva. And if anything, if you're going to allow a get, I'm serious, a get, there's certainly a concern that you're going to write. So yeah, but nevertheless, it's not listed. So it's kind of funny why that it's not mentioned explicitly in the Mishnah. Okay, two dots.
Is it
going
to have to be written by you?
Yeah. It's a business transaction.
Two dots. The Gemara says, "Ve'elohim mishum mitzvah." Now, the last category of the Mishnah, forbidden activities on Shabbos and Yontif, lo makdishin ve'lo ma'arichin ve'lo machrimin. These are all different versions of making something hektish. You're not allowed to make things hektish on Shabbos ve'yontif. Gemara says, "Gzeira mishum mekach u'memker." It's a gzeira is forbidden derabbanan mishum mekach u'memker because it is too similar to doing ordinary business transactions. Because this is like a business transaction to hektish, and so it is too similar to regular business transactions. The Rishonim are bothered by a question over here. Well, who says that business is forbidden on Shabbos V'yantif? After all, earlier in Masechta, there are occasions when you can keep the store open and people can provide their yantif needs and all that. Yeah, the measuring the things. So, but in any case, presumably, there's an issue of Mekach HaMemker Shabbos V'yantif.
You're not doing business, though. I'm saying you're providing a service, but you're not doing business.
Well buying and selling.
You're going to sell afterwards.
The seller is selling and the buyer is buying.
Right. It's not a business transaction. You're doing a tova. You're not allowed to do business on Shabbos V'yantif.
Well, in other words, what you're saying is that it's a very limited heter, only for yantif needs.
Right.
And only under certain precautions in place.
You're doing chesed.
Fair enough. But the point is that if that itself was prohibited so slightly, only the Rabban is a gzera, then to make hekdeshos forbidden mitam, that is like what the Gemara earlier said, that would be a gzera le gzera. So that's what either Rashi says over here, that was necessary kula chara gzera hi, but Rashi says maybe regular business is worse than just the gzera. Rashi says it may even be bumped up to a level of an Isur Midivrei Kabbalah, because the Pesukim in Navi already kind of clamped down on business on Shabbos, and so there might be something more chumer about business which would allow a gzera to be made to protect against ordinary business transactions. But in any case, that's what the Gemara says is the basis for the Isser against Makdishin and Ma'arichin. The Rishonim point out over here that they think that this prohibition against Hektish and Makdishin is not if you're going to just make a generic pledge of I'm going to give money to Hektish. So that pledge would not necessarily be included in this din of Ein Makdishin. It's only if it's Ein Makdishin tangible objects or something specific that actually could be similar to doing business. But if all you're going to do is like take a neder tzedakah, we do that all the time on Shabbos V'yantif. You make a mishaberach, you make a pledge, you make a yisker pledges, and all of that stuff. So presumably that's not a violation of this din of Ein Makdishin and Ein Marichin and Ein Machrimin. Well, we're hoping that they're right, because, I mean, that's what we're doing all the time. So... Okay, then the Gemara, the two dots here, Mishnah continues to say, Velo magbi and trumas and maestros. You can't take trumas and maestros. Gemara says, Pshita! Obviously! That's not so obvious to me. Exactly why is that obvious, that you can't take trumas and maestros? What did the Gemara think was so obvious?
Because you're separating?
So, yeah, so? What Yisr is there in separating? Separating, it means borer.
Borer.
It's not really borer, because it's the same thing. Gemara earlier calls that... Ochel from Ophel is the same thing.
Well, why wouldn't it be Borer, though?
Well, it's a fair question, but earlier on in the Masechta, when this came up, and then discussion about what actually is wrong with doing Trumas and Maestros, Borer was never on the list of things that was identified as being the problem. Bora would... Okay, I don't know. I don't know how to account for why it wouldn't be Borer.
It's not a mixture. It's not a...
It wasn't Urv in the first place.
Yeah.
You're creating two statuses. It starts out with a single status,
so
you pull a piece off, and it creates two separate and different statuses, in which case then you didn't have Tyrobus of these two things that you've refined. Maybe that's what's going on. When the Rishonim talk about this, the Trumus and Maestros, they really identify only two other problems. They identify the problem of Tikkun, of Mesak and the food as Tevel, as Treif, until you take off Trumus and Maestros and you make it kosher. That's the main Iser. And the other Iser is the Mekaf Memker kind of an Iser, because you're reassigning title of the food to the Kohanim for Truma and Leviim and Daniyamelon. So it's one or the other of these two things. But even so, to say that it's pshita, that it's forbidden, okay, I don't know. But in any case, it is pshita. Normally when the Gemara asks a pshita, it's either asking, it's pshita because it was already stated. Either it's because it already exists and is included in a previous category, it's mentioned someplace else, or common experience shows that this is pshita because it's obvious that this should be whatever the statement was in that the Gemara says was pshita. In this case, it's not so obviously what was so pshita about it. It's also strange that none of the Rishonim over here try to explain what's pshita about it, which means that it was pshita to them that it's pshita. I don't know. I don't get it. Okay, in any case, nobody's disputing this, so in that sense, it's pshita. Gemara says, Tani Rav Yosef, lo nitzrach ala litna l'kohen bo biyom. It may not be so pshita in some cases. What if, let's say, this is the way Rashi kind of paints what the Gemara says over here, is what if we took Tevel, you have your Tevel food, and you take some off, and you bring it right over to the Kohen, right over to the Levi. So there's nothing that's nikar about what you've done, that you've done at Tikkun. So Rashi says, that's why you might have thought that the whole prohibition against the Trumas Maisos is because it's nikar that you're doing Tikkun Kli, and or Tikkun food, Tikkun Ochlin. And so if you bring it right over, you might have made a case for that should be mutter, because incidentally your food is kosher, but in the course of doing that, you've also provided food to the Kohen and to the Levi, and that food is kosher for him to eat also today on Yontif. And so you might have been able to make a case for why it should be mutter. And the Gemara says, in any case, that's why it has to be said that even in that case, it's not allowed. You're not allowed to give Trumas and Maestros, you're not allowed to mafresh the Trumas and Maestros, even to give it to the Kohen and to the Levi Bobiyom. But then the Gemara says, but wait a second, but don't take this too far. Certain kinds of Trumas and Maestros, mostly Truma, you are allowed to be Mafrish on Yontif, maybe even on Shabbos, which is, Hani Mili Peri de Tevili Meyasmol, Aval Peri de Tevili Ha'idna Kigon Isa, Nafrushi Minechal, Mefarshina, Yehavina Lekohen. Gemara says, but wait a second, but that's only if this food on Friday evening was Tevel, and you could theoretically have been Mafresh already before Shabbos started, before Yontif started. But what happens if you have, let's say you're baking bread on Yontif itself, and on Yontif itself, bread, it's a different form of Tevel, it's not really the same kind of a Tevel as the Tevel that you got from the ground, from the produce, but the same kind of a concept that it's still Tevel, and it still requires Hafrashas Truma, which we call Challah. And that, it says here, if you only made the dough on Yontif itself, go right ahead. That you're allowed to be mafrish on Yontif itself. And so you would be allowed, and that's even Ochel Maisa, you're allowed to do that. So you can do, you can take off the truma, even bo biyom. So it's not quite true that this is a categorical prohibition against Trumas and Maisos on Shabbos or Yontif, because it's not really true. It's only for things that you could have been mafrish before Shabbos or Yontif started. On the other hand, you should just realize that the normal procedure for being mafresh challah is that you take a little bit of the challah and you burn it. But you can't do that on Yontif itself. So you'd have to make that change in the routine if you're going to be mafresh on Yontif itself. If you're going to be baking fresh challah, bread, whatever you're going to be making on Yontif itself, then you just have to change that slight routine, and not to burn up the bit of challah on Yontif itself. Wait till afterwards.
Just make a small quantity.
Okay, or you could avoid it altogether, but then you're not being then you're just avoiding this altogether. It may not be smart to avoid the mitzvah of Prussia. If you would normally be doing that, then go right ahead, do that, and get your kiyum ha-mitzvah of challah. Don't be reluctant just because of this slight change in the routine. Gemara says, "Vahani mishum rishus ika mishum shavus leka." What kind of a categorization is going on in the Mishnah? The Mishnah has three different categories. What's called shavus, rishus, and mitzvah. Shavus really is just a generic category called prohibitions derabbanan. So the Gemara asks, "Well, wait a minute. But why are we separating then rishus and mitzvah from the first category called shavus?" The Gemara asks, "You mean that these other things rishus?" You would categorize these the second category mitzvah says rishus, but you wouldn't include them also under shavus. And then the Gemara says, and the third category, v'hani mishum mitzvah ik mishum shavus laka. Am Rabbi Yitzchak lo mi boy kam. And Rabbi Yitzchak says, no. The way the wording the Mishnah is supposed to be read like this: lo mi boy shavus gereda to the yasser. There are prohibitions that the Chazal forbade the rabbanan. Such as, and it gives a few, and then it goes on to say, "Ela afilu shavus de rishus nami yasser, lo mi boy shavus de rishus de yasser, ela afilu shavus de mitzvah nami yasser." It goes on to say that in the Mishnah, these prohibitions, the Rabbanan, will even be for these few mitzvahs that are rishus, which we described as being like a minor mitzvah, and even mitzvah, which are like categorical mitzvahs. And so, okay, it's just a question of wording of the Mishnah. But it doesn't really—it's not really saying anything significant over here. The point is that the Mishnah is really referring to one category, which is the prohibitions derabbanan, and it just identified three labels: the non-mitzvah, the minor mitzvah, and the categorical mitzvah. All right, two dots. Kol elu b'yantif amru. The Mishnah—the last two lines of the Mishnah are that these things are forbidden on Yantif. The Chazal forbade these on Yantif. Kal v'chomer b'Shabbos. And then the final line of the Mishnah is Yantif and Shabbos are really the same. Ein bein yantif l'shabbos ela ochel nefesh bilvad, except for ochel nefesh rules. And the ochel nefesh, the Chumash itself says that you're allowed to cook on Yantif, your ochel nefesh needs. And that's the only distinction. But when it comes to other prohibitions, presumably the Chazal would have equated Shabbos and Yantif, and that's the ruling and the statement made in the Mishnah. If you know, we've gotten pretty far along in Beitza. If you think back to distinctions between Shabbos and Yontif, there were a few. In the very first daf, for example, we had the possibility of a distinction between Shabbos and Yontif. And then we had a reverse distinction between Shabbos and Yontif, where Yontif was more chummer than Shabbos, simply because it generally is more kal. And then there were several other places. One of these places, the Gemara asks, is on the previous daf. On the previous daf, it says here, the opening line of our parak. Our parak begins with the line Meshilin Peres Derech Aruba B'Yantif Avolo B'Shabbos. There you go. So how can the Mishnah on the next page claim that there's no differences between Shabbos and Yantif? One page earlier, we had already made a distinction. That's what the Gemara asks here. Veramini, they asked us a contradiction in the Mishnayos. Meshilin Derech Aruba B'Yantif Avolo B'Shabbos. So how can the Mishnah claim that Shabbos and Yantif are the same, other than Ochel Nefesh? Rav Yosef, the Amora Rav Yosef says, Lo kasha ha Rabbi Eliezer ha Rabbi Yoshua. So the approach that's going to be taken here is that you cannot reconcile these two statements, and all you can do is attribute them to two different shitos. Now Rav Yosef's attempt here, which is going to be rejected, is that he thinks that you can assign these two different statements to two different Tanayim based on another machlokes. The Tanya is a braisa that's quoted earlier also in the Masechta, Osovi es bino shenaf lelebor. Let's say you have Osovi es bino, two animals, one animal, a kosher animal, and its child fall into a bor, and therefore the point being in Osovi es bino is it precludes using both of these behemoths on Yantif. You can't sheft them both because you can only sheft one or the other, and then not the second one, because of the Osov Yasbino restriction. And so they fall into a boar, and you want to try to retrieve them. If you leave them there, they might die, and you lose the money, the worth of the animal, of the behemoth. And Rabbi Eliezer Amer, Ma'ales Arishon, Almanas L'shochta V'shochta V'hasheni Yosela Parnas B'mkoma K'dei Shelo Yemus. Rabbi Eliezer says, you can take one up, that's true, you can take one up and shecht it, but the other one you can't take out of the boar. All you can do is you can send somebody down, send food down, or send somebody down to make sure that it will not die. Rabbi Yeshua allows you to take them both up. How? Mala es arishon al manas l'shochto v'ein l'shochto. Take the first one up as if you're going to sheft it. You look at it carefully and you decide you don't want it. And then you take the second one up as if you want that one. And then you sheft whichever one is best, whichever one you want. So I don't know exactly who you're trying to fool, but you're trying to make it not very obvious to an onlooker of the scene who is not privy to exactly what calculations are being made here, that you haven't done anything very obviously wrong in what you've done.
And the onlookers know
that's the harama.
That it's osoba espanam.
Yeah.
How do people know that this
well,
is the onlooker?
Does it matter if it's osoba espanam or just two animals? It's the same thing. Right?
Maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe it doesn't matter if the onlooker wouldn't realize that there's an osoba espanam block against using them both. Maybe it was just you had a choice, and so that's. But even so, you would be allowed to choose. If you have two behemoths that you made a hazmana, a ziman, and then you can choose whichever one you want. You don't have to shecht all of the ones that you're hazman. So maybe, I don't know. In any case, the Gemara says here, that's Rabbi Yehoshua's kula. Well, we've seen this before. This came up earlier, 10 dafim ago, the same b'raisa. But now, Rabbi Yosef's point being that you see there's a machlokes here, these Tanayim, Rabbi Eliezer against Rabbi Yehoshua, about whether the pressure of the hefsid mamon would allow you to do a harama, maybe to be lenient about this, about the Iser, which only would apply in Yantif, presumably, because only Yantif where you're going to encounter this possibility of shechting the behema and justification to remove it from the boar. And so Rabbi Yosef's suggestion seems to be that you see this machlokes, Rabbi Eliezer versus Rabbi Yehoshua, might also account for the question whether it's permissible to move all of the peiros off the roof in order to dry them to get them into the house, which we're permitted to do on Yontif but not on Shabbos. So according to this, Rabbi Yehoshua would allow you to do that, and Rabbi Eliezer would not allow you to do that. Amalei Abaye says to him, I don't see the equation. Mimai, what makes you think that these are related? Dilma ad kan lo kuama Rabbi Eliezer hasam ela de efter de parnasta. Maybe Rabbi Eliezer is only machmir in the case because there is something you can do to keep the behema alive while it's in the boar. And it's not necessarily going to be a hefsid. And therefore, maybe that's why he takes a hard line. And he says, you know what, send somebody down or get some food down there or whatever. Provide for the animal where it is. You don't have to pull it up. It's going to be a little harder for you, but you'll deal with it. And aval hacha de lo efshir b'parnasa, lo. But maybe Rabbi Eliezer would concede that if it's a matter of your fruits drying on the roof and the storm clouds are gathering, maybe he would allow you to push them into the house also. How do you know not? Inami, and we have the opposite argument also. Inami ad kan lo kom Rabbi Yehoshua hasa melo di efshir li'arume, aval hacha de lo efshir li'arume, lo. And anyway, how do you know that Rabbi Yehoshua's kula about taking both behemoths up would apply here to the roof case? Because in the roof case, it's very blatant what you're doing. You are rescuing the peiros, and that's all anybody would see, and that's actually what you're doing, and that's what it looks like you're doing. When it comes to the behemoths, he doesn't allow you to just pull the two behemoths up and forget it. He says you have to make sure you do it in such a way that it's not nikar. And so how do you know that Rabbi Yeshua would be mekel about it? So he says the whole equation falls apart. Neither side aligns necessarily with the two opinions of the Mishnahis. The Gemara says, Ela or Rav Papa. Rav Papa gives another suggestion as to how to resolve the apparent contradiction between the first line of the Perek, which says that there's a chiluk between drying the fruit, which is allowed on Yontif, not on Shabbos, versus the statement, the summary statement that Yontif and Shabbos are the same, except for Ochel Nefesh needs. Ela or Rav Papa Lokasha, Harbeis Shamai, Harbeis Hila. Well, we have another Machlokas HaTanayim, which may account for this. This nun, this is the Mishnah, and this is the Mishnah called Mitoch. This is the Mitoch Mishnah in Yud Beis Amud Aleph. Bishama Yomrin Ein Motzien Lo Asa Kadmi Lo Asa Lulav Velo Asa Sefer Torah L'Rishus HaRabim. Bishama don't allow you to do Hotzah for any need other than actual Ochel Nefesh. Lo Beis Hillel Matirin. And Beis Hillel Ayatu. And that's why we're familiar with the leniencies of carrying things to shul, even if there's no Eruv on Yontif. Not necessarily for food, just because of other tzarafim, who are going visiting on Yontif without an Erev with a baby. And so, in other words, these kinds of things that we know are permissible, really only permissible according to Beis Hillel, but that's called the Mitoch, and that's what we know is what we hold. That's the Mishnah on Yud Beis Amud Aleph. The Gemara thinks that therefore Rav Papa suggests maybe that's what's going on. Namely what? Presumably, his point is that namely, if you're going to hold mitoch, then you're going to have kulas on yontif that don't exist on Shabbos. Even though mitoch is a d'oraisa heter, but the point being that once the stakes are a little bit lower in that case, so that maybe even the muktza or the tircha rules might also favor yontif over Shabbos, whereas Beis Shammai, who don't accept that, they hold a purely only ochel nefesh and that's it. So they might, presumably, take a harder line on these prohibitions, the Rabbanan, on Yantif, and not allow them if they're not permissible as well on Shabbos. And the Gemara says the same kind of an objection. Dil malohi, ad kan loko amari Beis Shammai hasam elav ahotza, aval atil dilo. Gemara thinks, hold on a second. Maybe Beis Shammai's chumra is only because you're actually doing the real malacha, but not just the tiltul. And so therefore, how do you know that Beis Shammai would take a hard line also when it comes to something like the tiltul mutzah of pushing the peiris into the house? The Gemara says, oh, come on. Atu tiltul at tzarech utzahi. That's it. So meaning, don't you see that tiltul itself is like the first step of utzah and that they are tied together, and presumably the point being, and Rashi kind of explains that the whole prohibition against muktzah altogether is because they're trying to keep you safe from violating carrying, from violating chotzah. That's the thing that people do not at all realize, is that the iser muktzah, both on Shabbos and on Yantif, is don't handle things, because if you don't handle things, you won't have them in your hands, you won't have them in your pockets, you won't walk outside carrying them. And that's the main prohibition. To the point where Rashi right here asks, hang on a second, so that's the case. So then you can't handle anything. You shouldn't be allowed to handle anything. You shouldn't be allowed to handle Sfarim, you shouldn't be allowed to handle Caleb and your food and everything. And Rashi says here, on his daf, he says here, and the only reason why they had to carve out these exceptional things is because otherwise you can't live. You can't have your own Shabbos, your Simchas Yontif. And so they were able to reduce the prohibition against muktzah only on things you don't need. And that's the way to understand, that's what our Gemara is saying, it's the way to understand the prohibition of tiltil, meaning of muktzah. And so that's, therefore, there should be an equation between muktzah and hotzah, and therefore Beis Shammai presumably might be the ones who actually take a hard line against tiltil here in the Mishnah, don't allow you to handle the peiros in order to push them into the house. If you have to assign names, then that's a likely thing. That's where the Gemara ends up. Which is actually interesting, because it means that the rule of Ein Bein, Yatif Shabbos, Olchem Yatif Medvad, according to this, is Beis Shammai. But Beis Hillel would not say such a thing, because they would have many more leniencies. Okay, the Mishnah now takes a sharp turn and moves into a new direction altogether. There is an Iser on Shabbos Yantif called Tchum. You're not allowed to walk too far. On Shabbos Yantif, you're not allowed to walk away out of your makom too far. 1 mil is the maximum that you're allowed to walk out of your makom. 1 mil is 1 kilometer. You're not allowed to walk more than a kilometer away from your makom. We're not familiar with the concept so much here because we live in cities. Cities, the makom is so large, even before you get to the 1 kilometer range that you have, that we just rarely encounter it. People in camps encounter this, potentially people who are up in the country in more rustic settings, in hotels. These are where you're likely to encounter the possibility of a tchum. If you're a traveler and you somehow or other are caught before Shabbos outside of a residential area, you might encounter tchum isurim. But in any case, the tchum, it's an iser. It's not about carrying, it's only about you walking somewhere too far, out of your makom. Now we're being told here in this Mishnah, it's not only about you, it's also about your stuff. Your stuff also have a tchum, and your stuff also are restricted to remain in their makom, and you can't bring your stuff outside of their tchum. Well, what tchum is their tchum? So it says here in the Mishnah, ha-behema v'ha-kelim k'ragli ha-bailim. The tchum of stuff, of your animals, of your things, your kelim, are karagli habaylim. And that Iser of Tchum, it applies even on Yantif. You see from here to the rest of the Masechta, that this is even on Yantif, there's an Iser Tchum. So it says here that your stuff have the same Tchum as the owner as the Ba'ilim. However, with a whole bunch of exceptions. However, Hamoser Behemto Libino Leroe Hareiluk Ragli Ha'Ba'ilim. If let's say you're not the one who's taking care of the behema, for example. Let's say your behema is being taken care of by the shepherd or by somebody who's going to do this. So then it says here the following. The first line here is, if you give your behema to your kid, to not your kid who lives in your house, it's the same tchum as you, your kid who like lives someplace else in town or wherever. So then, or the roa, or to the shepherd, it still follows you. Why should it follow you? It's because you only handed over the behema to the shepherd, to your kid, on Yantif itself, or on Shabbos itself. And that's why all of these tchum issues are always set as soon as Shabbos begins. There's a moment, the Shabbos begins, and then all the tchum settings are in place, and therefore, at that point, the behema was with you. And so, even if on Shabbos or on Yantif, if you give it to the roa, they have to be mindful of your tchum. Kalim, hamiyuchadim liyachad menu afin shebebayis hara'elu karag love. If let's say you have in the bayis household kalim that potentially could be used by anybody, but if they're miyuchad to one of the family members, they are specifically used only by or mainly by one person. So then, even if the legal title is shared. But the point is about the normal use is assigned to one individual, that's enough to be able to have that individual be the determinant and create the makom for those kalim. That becomes significant over here later on, because there are going to be a number of cases where it's not legal ownership that's going to matter, it's going to be the actual use that matters, the user of the thing, the caretaker of the thing. So in this Mishnah, it says over here that kalim that are always used by one individual, though that individual is what determines the makom. And if these are just general all-purpose kalim that anybody might use, then if it's shared among several families or shutfin, then the kli has to remain in the common overlap ground, because you can't ever pull it beyond anybody's tchum. And everybody has to be mindful of that, presumably, if they make an eruv. You can modify your makom by the mechanism of the Eruv Tchumen, and if you do so, then you will have an impact on all the shared things that you are a partner in. And all of that stuff is going to have to remain only located in the common ground between you, if you made an Eruv there, and everybody else. And if you have two people, presumably, we're going to see here in a second, who make Eruv in opposite directions, then you might have a very tiny overlap, which all of the common kalim, the shared kalim, are going to have to remain. Not necessarily a problem, but it's just something to be mindful of. Hashoa kli mefaviro, me erev yantif. If you borrow a kli from the owner on erev yantif, sometime before yantif, keregla yashoa. So then that kli, it's not about who owns the kli, it's about who has use of the kli, and therefore the shoel is the user, and therefore the shoel's tchum, the shoel's makom, is going to apply to the kli's makom as well. Biyom tov. But if you borrow it on Yom Tov, just like we said a second ago, since Malkom's status is determined as Yom Tov begins, then anything that happens during Yom Tov is not going to affect its Malkom. So, B'Yom Tov K'ragli HaMashiel. Then it's the lender, the owner's Tchum that matters. The Fein Isha, Shasho'ala Mechavrata Tavlin Umayim Umelach Le'isa Sa. What if, let's say, you're making some food and you need some ingredients in the recipe and you have to go next door and you borrow? And those foods get put into this batch, and now you produce a food, but some of the food came from ingredients that were borrowed from somebody else, which may have a different tchum. So it says here, yeah, you have to be careful about that. You have to make sure that the food stays in a place where the tchumin of both of you are common. Rabbi Yehuda poter b'mayim. Rabbi Yehuda thinks that an exception should be made for water, mitnei she'ein b'hem mamish, because water doesn't really count. So, whatever that means. So he says that water is like it's bottle, doesn't count, and so that's not going to matter if you take the food where you had to borrow water from somebody whose tchum was somewhere else, whose makom was someplace else. You could ignore their makom for purposes of where you could bring the overall food. Martin says mas nisen.
So from this mission, we learn that it's a woman's place to cook.
It might be describing what was commonly done, whether it necessarily was prescribed to be done. It's more descriptive rather than prescriptive. But it may be what you said anyway. But I'm just saying you can't be sure that that's what's being assumed over here. The Gemara says, Masnisin Dilo Ki Revi Dosa. The Gemara says, you know, we do have a statement from Revi Dosa that does not seem to match the statement of the Mishnah. The Gemara says, look, what do we know? Disanya, the Braisa says, Revi Dosa Omer. The Amrila Abishol. Okay, one of the Tanakh, either Revi Dosa or Abishol, said the following ruling. Halokeach behema mechavrato me'erev yomtov hafubi shalom asarlo ela bi yomtov reyelu karagli halokeach. If you purchase a behema before yomtov, even though you only got delivery on yadav itself, the buyer gets the tchum. Because even though the title belonged to you, but the location of the behema was there at the seller, but the understanding was that it was going to be delivered on Yantif, and therefore the expectation was that on Yantif it was going to be delivered to the buyer, and that's why the buyer gets the tchum, that gets define the tchum of the behema. But now it says the discrepancy. The next line it says, "V'hamoser behema l'roa afal pi shalom esar lo ela biyom tevreilu karagli haroa." That's the problem. Problem is that this same Raisa goes on to say that if you hand your behema over to a shepherd, even though that was only done on Yantif itself, the shepherd's makom is the one that defines the makom for this behema. But that shouldn't follow. And the Mishnah says it's not true. The Gemara answers, no, that's not a problem. Well, how many shepherds are there in town? If there's only one shepherd who takes everybody's behemoth, or you always only give your behemoth to one roe. So it's not as if there's a choice or a decision or anything. So it's already known as Yontif begins what's going to happen on Yontif, that it's going to be delivered to this shepherd to be cared for, and therefore roe echad. Then even on Yantif, even if the delivery, even if you only handed it to the shepherd to care for it on Yantif, the shepherd's tchum is what defines the tchum of the behema. But b'shnei roim, not. Because shnei roim, you have to make a decision, and that's not going to automatically be clear before Yantif begins what your decision is going to be. Dekanami, and you know, you could even see this implied in the Mishnah itself, because the Mishnah, when describing that case of delivering the behema to the shepherd, it actually kind of is vague. It says to your son or to the shepherd. Sounds like there is decisions to be made still, and it's not as if it's obvious what's going to happen with the behema. The Gemara thinks that that's a slight diuk that you could make to confirm this suggestion of the case of the Mishnah is only when it's not obvious who's going to care for this behema on Yontif, and that's where the owner's tchum matters for the behema. But if it is obvious, then the Braisa kicks in with, if there's only one Roa, there's no decision to be made, so then even if you hand it over to the Roa on Yantif, it's his Tchum. Mar says, Shmamina. Yeah, that seems pretty clear. Amar Rabba Bar Bachan, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Okay, so now the Amar Rabba Bachan quotes Rabbi Yochanan, saying, and how do we paskin? Halacha Kirby Dosa. Now, wait a second. You paskin like Rabbi Dosa? It didn't seem like there was any question that had to be paskin because there was no actual fight. There wasn't a machlokas that we had to take a stand on. That's what the Gemara is going to say in a minute. The Gemara first says, hang on a second, but how could Rabbi Yochanan paskin like Rabbi Dosa? Rabbi Yochanan always paskins by policy like Shtam Mishnas. Mi amar Rabbi Yochanan hachi, v'amar Rabbi Yochanan halacha k'Shtam Mishnah. Utsanan, and in our Mishnah it says, ha-behema v'ha-kelem k'ragli ha-bailin. The Gemara says, well, so what? We just said a second ago that the Mishnah is only when there are multiple roim and you have to make a choice. And the Braiser, Bidoz, was talking about when there's only one. V'lavu kimna kan, v'roa echad, kan mishnei roim. There you go. Okay, so that pretty much amounts to the end of this discussion about the shepherds. But now we're actually going into similar kinds of cases where you have partners over kalim and that they have to be maintained only within common territory. But when a division is to be made, then we have to see how that's going to play out. Tan Rabban, Shnayim Sheshalu Chaluk Echad, Bishutfus. What if two people are borrowing a suit from somebody? Zele Leich Bo Shachris Lebeis Hamidrash, Zele Likanis Bo Arvis Lebeis Hamishteh. One person needs to borrow the suit because he has a party to go to on Leil Yantif, and the other one needs the suit because he has to go to davening. And to the base medrash, the daven, or something. And zeh irei v'lov letzafo, and zeh irei v'lov lederum. The problem being that one of these guys needs the, for his event requires an eruv on the north part of the territory around town, and the other one needs his shul is, or his party is, in the south part. And so what are the rules here? Zeh she'irei v'lov letzafon, mahalach letzafon, karagli mi she'irei v'lov ledarom. Zeh she'irei v'lov ledarom, mahalach ledarom only, karagli mi she'irei v'lov letzafon. The rule is, you just have to, it's going to be amounts the same thing. You can only go to the place which is common, which they both could go to. And so therefore, because they both borrowed the Kli B'Shutfus, intending to use it on Yontif, it has a shared makom. The makom has to be only the common overlap between the two makomos of these two people who are going to be using the Kli. And therefore, it may be that they're not going to be able to bring the Kli to the place where they need it. And in fact, so much so, that if they spread apart their Tkubin so far from each other that there is just no overlap, it can't be that there's no overlap at all, because then these two people would never be able to be talking to each other and hand off the suit. But the point being that if there's just a minimal overlap, then you can't bring the suit anywhere, because you can't move it away outside of either one's Tkubin. That's pretty obvious. That's how it would play out. Gemara says that v'imatz'u esetchum arei zeh lo yazizana mimkoma. Okay, that's the end of the Gemara up to this point. Now the Gemara goes into an important additional consideration, which is what we will call a Shas topic. A topic that comes up in different forms about 50 places throughout Shas. Let's take a look. Gemara says, Itmar, there's a discussion among Amoraim. Shnayim shelokhu chavisu behema b'shutfus. What if you have two guys who buy some item, b'shutfus, and that they're shutfin? And we understand the rules. Right? The rules are pretty simple. Whenever you have shutfin, own an item, then the item itself has the makom as defined by the common ground between the two owners. But this is a little bit different. What if the intention is that we're going to dissolve the shutfus? That the shutfus is not intended to remain that way, but it's intended to be dissolved. In other words, the shutfus is such where we both own the thing, but the expectation is that we're going to divide it up, and then each one will be the sole owner of the part that they get. Now, when you divide up the shutfus, when you divide up, so then each person has exclusive ownership over the thing. The question is, when you take that into account, is that going to allow, as Yontif begins, remember how it goes, as Yontif begins, we intend to dissolve the shutfus. Can you dissolve the shutfus at some point on Yontif, so as to say that when Yontif began, each one had exclusive control over the share that they get? That would be very easy if we could, from the beginning, if we could identify who's getting which share. If we could earmark that at the beginning, that's obvious. That's simple, that'll work. Question is, the decision and the determination, the solution of the shutfus is going to happen on Yontif itself. So now the question is this. Here's the question. When Yontif begins, we know some later time, some of this will go to one, the rest of this go to the other. We can't say right now which one is going to one, which one is going to the other. We know that something will, and we know that it's going to be determined later. Can we consider the dissolution, the determination made as of when we need it to be made, or do you have to wait until it's known? Can the status of the objects change based on later decisions?
You know, you take in a cup of wine, or you know, a pitcher of wine. Each one takes a pitcher of wine. It doesn't matter.
Right. Yeah, case of bottles. Somebody went to the liquor store or whatever, bought a case of bottles or something, and somebody's going to walk off with half of them. Somebody's going to walk off the other half of them. But we didn't divide it up. We don't know which half is half. But the point is, we don't care. The point is that eventually it's going to get one and going to get the other. So you know that it's going to be divided up. You just haven't identified which one is which. So here's what it says. This is what's going on. This is called the sugya called Breira. And you've encountered Breira, incidentally, earlier in the Masechta. Two people who own, well, let's say, a chavis, a case of wine, or a behema, b'shutfus. Rav Amar. Rav holds the following. Chavis muteris. You can divide up the chavis. That's fine. But behema asura. But you can't divide up the behema and expect that when you get your share of the behema, you can go to your own makom and not the and the other one to his makom. Shmuel Amar Chavis Nami Yasura. Shmuel doesn't allow any of this. Rav says, let's try to figure out Rav. Rav is the complicated one. Maikasavar Rav. Ikasavar Yesh Breira. So then why not the Behemah? I feel the Behemah Tishteri. Ikasavar Ein Breira. Then I don't understand why Yafavis is allowed. Mar says, Leolam Kasavar Yesh Breira. Really, the answer is going to be here. Really, Rav is going to have to hold Yesh Breira. And that explains why you're allowed to divide up the case of the wine, but not the Behemah. Why is the Behemah different? Vishanya Behemah, the Kayanki Tchumen Mehadadi. Okay, here's what's going on. Rav says that there's a problem in the Behemah case. Because even if, let's say it were clear that before Yom Tov began, we actually made the plan to actually divide the Behemah. You're going to get this, 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 and I'm going to get the rest. And let's say it was clear. Rav says, you're still going to have a problem. Because until the division is made, this living animal is still metabolizing and digesting and is functioning and is living and circulating, whatever. So then all of the parts that you would be getting are being sustained and kept alive by the parts from the other guy too. And therefore, that's going to mess up the tchum. He says, you can't ignore the fact that even what's yours is being kept alive by the part of it that's the other person's. And so he says, not so then you can't move out of the other guy's tchum. And that's why. The Gemara says that, Shanya behema de kayanki tchumen mehadadi, and therefore saying breira won't fix that problem. So Amri lei Rav Kahana Ravasi le Rav. Rav Kahana Ravasi said to Rav, where'd you make up that rule? Lisa mukta lo chashashu, Lisa tchumen chashashu. The shasik Rav. Then Rav had no response. So they attacked him with, I don't understand, why'd you make up this rule called yonik? Since when does that ever define, as a matter and mess up a status of a behema? Because the status is clear, but because it's kept alive by some other thing that would make a problem, so you have to take that into account. He says, the way they ask the kasha is, but why is it that you wouldn't be concerned of such a thing happening if it's muktza that causes the problem? It's a bit unclear exactly. Tosas has a couple of opinions here about what that means. Rashi has one pshat here. Tosas has a better pshat, I think, which is, look, every animal, when it's alive, it's growing and it has new molecules of fat and blood that are being generated all throughout, and all of that's nolad. It's all muktza, it's all nolad. And if you're really going to take that seriously, that those things will affect the status of the whole behemah, then every behemah is always going to be muktza on every yantif, because there are always going to be spits of the behemah that are all going to be muktza from nolad. So you don't care about that for that purpose. So why would you care about that for the tchum consideration? The shasik Rav. Okay, Rav had no answer to that. It doesn't necessarily mean, sometimes shasik Rav means that he doesn't want to say his answer, and sometimes it means he has no answer. My Haviyala, what are we paskin? What's the psak on this question of borer for these purposes of the Baralasei? Here's what we're going to be told. Rav Oshia and Rav Yochanan, these two Amorayim, are going to have an opinion about the psak. They have a machlokas, but we're not sure exactly which way. So let's see. The Gemara at first suggests Rav Oshia paskins yesh breira, and Rav Yochanan paskins ein breira. Gemara says, but that's impossible. The Sava Rav Oshia yesh breira. But we know that Rav Oshia is on record denying breira. V'hatanan, and this is a Mishnah that actually came up earlier in the Masechta also, so you're familiar with this. Hames babayis. If you have a body, a corpse is in the house, and therefore the room is tamei atumas ohel. And not only that, but there's a din called Sof Tumalatseis. And not only if all the doors are closed, let's say, and the mace is in the house, so yes, the bias is all going to be a makam of Tuma, but there's a din de Rabbanan also, the Sof Tumalatseis, you have to imagine the door is open, because they're going to take the body out of this room. It's not going to be a grave, so it's going to be brought out of the room. If you're going to bring the mace out of this room that way, then you have to imagine right now that the mace is like in transit, and therefore all other zones that would be en route to removing the body have to be considered tummy right now. So that halach is called sof tumah letzeis, that the body is going to be brought out here. Well, that's nice when there's one door. What happens when you have multiple doorways? So is what it says. It says, if you have a mace bebayis velo psachim harbe, and there are multiple doorways, kulan tumein, they all have to be treated as tamei, but if niftach echad mehen, hu tamei v'kulan tahorin. If one is open, in other words, one is clearly the door that's going to be brought out, then that one is the only one that has tuma sufta malatzeis, and the other is not. And if chishev lahotziyo b'yachad mehen o b'chalon sheish b'dalet al dalet matzelas ala psachim kulan. If you plan to bring the mace out through one of them, that's enough to make that one tameh and the others tahor. And Beishamai yomrim v'hu shech yishev alav ad shelo yamus. Beishamai said that's only going to work if the machshava was done before the body dies, before the person dies. But Beis Hillel say they don't care. Af la'af kishet misha yamus ha'meis. Okay, that's a statement of the Braisa. The Itmar Allah Amar Rabba Oshia, and Rabba Oshia has a comment about this. He says, you know, this machshava will not have retroactive force. It's not going to mean that the Softuma Latzeis only happened on the doorway that you intend. It's only going to be Mikana Lahaba, Latar Sapsacha Mikana Lahaba. Mar says, you see from here that he denies Breira. Because if he had held Breira, then you know what, right away when the person dies, that you're only going to take the mace out of one. And you know it's going to be determined at some later time that it's only going to be one doorway that's going to actually be the Softuma Latzeis. And so why can't that realization be enough at that time? So Rabbi Oshia says, wrong. So clearly he's denying Breira. He's saying that, no, once you make the determination, so the Mikana Lahaba, then that's going to, that you can consider that to be the Pesach. So Rabbi Oshia is right here on record denying Breira. Therefore, how can we claim that Rabbi Oshia paskins Yesh Breira? It says not so. The Gemara has to reverse it. Okay.